This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, November 11th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. 5G wireless service is supposed to bring faster download speeds, better connectivity, and enable a new generation of technology. But the rollout of 5G networks has been slow. Right now, you can only access them if you have a device with 5G capability and you're near a 5G tower. Very near. But our tech columnist Christopher Mim says more players are building their own private 5G networks, and that the change could help bring 5G bandwidth to places the major carriers don't serve. Chris will join us to explain after these headlines. There's a new study out led by a Stanford political science researcher that looks at how President Trump's tweets about voting impacted people's trust in elections. Our reporter Emily Glazer says about 2,000 respondents from both major political parties were asked to view dozens of the president's posts about election integrity, politics, and other topics, including claims that lacked evidence.
The most interesting finding here was that President Trump's tweets questioning the U.S. election's legitimacy are indeed effective in causing his supporters to believe that elections are rigged and to lose trust and confidence in elections. Interestingly, it actually boosted Democrats or non-Trump supporters' confidence in elections. So it showed just the divergence and the polarization. And it is the first time to prove something that some people anecdotally have thought might be true, that President Trump's tweets do have an impact with his supporters, but it actually shows very specific data and research that backs those claims up.
We should point out that respondents only saw the tweets themselves without any of the labels that Twitter has been placing on false and misleading posts, including some of the president's. It's not yet clear how effective those labels are. In a virtual event yesterday, Apple unveiled a new line of Macs that will run on its new in-house M1 chips. The chips promise to improve battery life and processing speeds and will enable users to run iPhone and iPad apps on the Mac. Our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern says the reveal gives us some clues about where Apple's priorities are.
What's interesting here is the hardware of these devices isn't really changing. That's the external design. It's still the same thickness. It's still the same keyboard. So we're not getting a crazy new design here. Yet Apple did hold an event and did want to talk for 45 minutes about this new progress they've made. And I think that does signal how much Apple really is thinking about the future of the Mac. There was a bit of time where people thought the Mac's going to go away. It's going to be replaced by the iPad. Yesterday was a signal that that's just not where this company's going.
The European Union's top antitrust enforcer has issued a charge sheet against Amazon, alleging that the company uses non-public data it gathers from third-party sellers to unfairly compete against them. The EU is also opening an investigation into how Amazon chooses which vendor is the default seller for any given product, alleging that Amazon and those that pay extra for its services are more likely to be chosen. A decision on whether Amazon violated competition law is expected next year. Amazon said it disagreed with the charges and that it would continue to engage with EU authorities to make sure they have a, quote, accurate understanding of the facts. And it's 11/11, which you might know as Veterans Day, but in China and increasingly around the world, it's a commercial holiday known as Singles Day. It was started in 2009 by the e-commerce giant Alibaba as kind of an anti-Valentine's Day for single people to celebrate their singledom by buying stuff. Singles Day has now turned into the world's biggest day of shopping. In 2019, Alibaba sold a record $38.3 billion worth of goods in just 24 hours. The company sells more on Singles Day than all U.S. retailers sell on Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. All right, coming up next, we'll hear about the players taking 5G infrastructure into their own hands. That's after the break. Wireless service is supposed to usher in a whole new era of technology, but 5G connectivity is still not exactly easy to come by. That's why some groups have been building their own 5G infrastructure. And a convergence of cheaper hardware, free and open source software, and accessible spectrum have made it possible for more players to get in the game. Our tech columnist Christopher Mims is here to explain. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what does access to 5G look like right now?
So a lot of the 5G access that we have now, it's kind of like tiny islands in the middle of the Pacific. You don't have really nationwide coverage, despite what we've been told. It's really a question of, if I am standing near this one 5G small cell, you know, I will get these incredible data rates on if I have the newest phone. Otherwise, it's not really going to have a big impact on me. And there also is an irony in that even if you don't have 5G, your 4G service may be getting better because of the infrastructure upgrades they had to do to make 5G happen. So 5G, it's kind of not really a thing yet out in the wild. Yes, you can have access to it. Maybe you're lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time, but it is going to be a long, slow, decade-long build out until you're able to simultaneously download 7 HD movies inside of 15 seconds or whatever it is you want to do with it.
And that access is sort of consistent with the digital divide, right? The discrepancy in who has access to the internet and who doesn't.
There is a lot of truth to that because 5G is going to go into these places where the networks, the carriers have the most density first. So the first time you encounter 5G, it might be in Times Square the next time you go there, something like that. You're not going to get it out in rural areas. You know, you may or may not get it on the highway in between major cities. It's really going to be where people already have a lot of access.
And so you've actually found some new players taking things into their own hands and building their own 5G networks. First off, how is that possible?
So one thing that's interesting about 5G in particular is it's arriving at the same time as some other enabling technologies and regulations. So the technologies are, in 2019, Facebook, of all companies, open source this project called Magma. It's the software that basically powers the back end of a 5G network. In the past, this was super proprietary. You know, if you were Nokia, you made it for your own hardware. If you're Ericsson or Huawei, you made it for your own hardware. But this is an effort to make this available to anybody. Then there's also less expensive 5G hardware. So the bottom line is people are able to create their own private 5G networks for maybe $5,000 worth of kit if you wanted to stick one on the telephone pole outside of your house and you were technically savvy. The other reason that's possible, though, you know, we all heard about Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile spending tens of billions of dollars on spectrum in these huge auctions. And of course, this has happened all across the world. But the FCC set aside some narrow sections of spectrum in the what's called the mid-band sub 6 gigahertz range. And basically anybody can use this spectrum. You have to register through a service like through Google or whatever, but it's inexpensive. And you basically just say, hey, I want to use this spectrum in this area, like in my town or my factory or whatever. And then you're off to the races. As one expert pointed out to me, this is the first open spectrum we have gotten since the debut of Wi-Fi and its enhancement. I mean, they opened up more spectrum later on, but we all know what a big deal Wi-Fi has been. I mean, when you set up a Wi-Fi router in your house, you don't have to go bid on spectrum with the FCC in order to use it. It's just available. So in the same way, there's this 5G spectrum that now pretty much anybody can use. And that's huge if you want to use it to set up rural broadband, or if you're a big corporation and you want to set up 5G inside a factory or across the entire expanse of your port or your mine. You don't have to wait for Verizon to come in, nor do you have to pay them a fee to service it for you. You know, you can kind of go in and there's a certain amount of DIY possible.
And so who are the players actually taking advantage of this opportunity that you just laid out?
Some of them are the usual suspects, right? Like, so if you want to go to Verizon and have them set up a private 5G network that uses this open spectrum, they're happy to take your money and do that for you. And that's great because they know how to run networks. But there are other smaller startups that are making this kind of stuff available. And, you know, frankly, some of them aren't even profiting from it. Like I mentioned, Facebook with Project Magma, that is open source software. So anybody can use that. It's kind of like Linux was to the web and the data center. And then, of course, you know, not incidentally, Linux also became Android. So there's a lot of potential for this open source software to become other stuff later on.
Chris, I think when we talk about 5G, a lot of the conversation so far has centered on the latest and greatest iPhone or maxing out pre-existing internet connections, as you mentioned before. What is the impact of this change and how might we see it take shape as 5G networks continue to develop?
You know, a major way that this could change our definition of 5G or what we think can be done with it is once anybody can set up their own network, you can sort of build it to suit So if you are trying to connect people in remote areas, like this company Y Connect Wireless, which is in, you know, rural Wisconsin, you know, every one of their towers connects to, on average, maybe a dozen, literally, you know, farms. That is a way to bridge the digital divide. You could also see that happening in cities. People forget this, but 15, 20 years ago, people had this idea, it's kind of dead now, that we were going to create municipal Wi-Fi. Cities would set up Wi-Fi, blanket the city, and it never really worked because Wi-Fi by law doesn't have very much power, so it can't travel very far. So it just ended up being too expensive to try to set these all up, and the speeds weren't fast enough. But you have this kind of second chance for cities to create a civic infrastructure of internet, which is almost, it reminds me, frankly, of like rural electrification under LBJ, when people said, hey, you know, electricity is vital to America's development. It should be a right almost, and we're going to subsidize it. You know, obviously cable companies and telcos do not like this and have lobbied against it consistently. Some folks who have kind of more power to push back on that and do their own thing are obviously corporations. So if you run a corporate campus somewhere, for security reasons alone, it makes sense for you to set up your own 5G network. Because if people are connecting to that, you have many fewer worries about, oh, you know, like, are they leaking their passwords on this open Wi-Fi network at Starbucks? You know, has somebody hacked into this part of our system? Because you own that network completely. So I think we're definitely going to see a lot more of that as well, whether it's connecting to devices, like, you know, connecting to your laptop instead of you plugging into the wall or plugging into Wi-Fi, or, you know, to phones and other mobile devices.
All right. Our tech columnist, Chris Mims, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.